Accession number 12661, Jim Ray, reel 20.
Mr. Ray, reel 20. Before you went to London, were you given any sort of briefing or any preparations for your trip out to?
No, we were just told that we were seconded to colonial staff, and I said, "Well, what's that, sir, please?" He said, "Well," he said, "you were training Africans to make them into soldiers, same as you would ordinary recruits." So I said, "Well, it's funny, there's only two of us in a battalion going down there." He said, "Sergeant Ray," he said, "I've got all the documents on your previous career and what you can do. And you're first class and distinguished in several subjects." He said, "That's what we wanted, and that's why you're chosen." Same with Sergeant Stewart. Little darky stood there, he's out behind his back, and I was doing all the talking, you see. And I went on that short leave, I believe I've said that before, mm-hmm. And I got all the documents, and then I went straight to the station, and I was on my way to London, and I had to report into the great Central Hotel, Marylebone. That's where we all went there.
Grand Central.
Grand Central Hotel. When it...
Who was there? What sort of a reception did you get?
Well, there was a receptionist. He was a staff sergeant. Booked in. And sure enough, we were expected. Sergeant Ray, yes. Stewart, sergeant, yes. Downright Infantry, 2nd Battalion, yes. Right, carry on. He says, go straight through into that big hall and report to the orderly officer. Well, we went into this long corridor in a great big hall. It must have been a banqueting hall, you know. And I was surprised to see the number of people in there.
How many?
Oh, there must have been about 70 or 80 at the most. And they were still coming in when I went in. Of all regiments in the British Army, all sergeants, staff sergeants, one or two sergeant majors, I think. About two or three sergeant majors. We had a lecture first. Explaining the purpose of being there and what we were going to do, and he said, tomorrow, he said, we'll start taking you to Mill Hill, to the Hospital of Tropical Diseases. There you will be inoculated, and you will come back here. You will be under strict supervision. And from now on, when you come back, you will not go out during the day, and you'll be only allowed out 3 hours in the evening.
Now, why was that?
Well, there's air raids for a start, and we could get our shipping orders any time. You see, you have to stand by. We're on standby, you see, and that was the whole purpose of that lecture. And we had cots. We were given dormitories. The big banqueting hall, it was more or less for the officers. They were separate, and some officers went out as well. They were in a separate place altogether, and they didn't mingle with us, but there were officers belonging to all regiments similar to my own, Gloucestershire, DLI, DCLI, Scots Guards, Scots Fusiliers, Northumberland Fusiliers, you know.
It'd all be regulars, so.
All regulars, yes. We all trained men. We'd be reservists and regulars. And we were in that hotel, and if you wanted any papers, one of the staff used to take your name, give the money, and he'd bring a daily paper in, and you could read up then, you know, pass the time. Nothing else to do, just lounge around, smoke, have a game of cards, waiting, chatting, you know. And we got our meals in a big, like a dining place. There's so many of us, there's two sittings. First and second sittings. For meals. Anything else?
Yeah. So how long were you there for then?
About nine or ten days.
And what kit were you kitted out? I mean,
we were given all our tropical equipment.
And what was that?
Shorts, all khaki drill shorts, jackets, mosquito boots, a canvas wash basin, canvas bath, a camp bed, mosquito net, and
so what happened when you actually
topies.
What happened when you actually went then? I mean, you got your posting.
Well, we went down to, we went from there down to Southampton.
Now, would this be September still, or would you have drifted into October by then?
Into October, yes. It's about October time. And we boarded the ship. It was a liner.
Do you know which one?
The name was painted out, and we couldn't camouflage it really. It was a liner. Actually, it was a surface raider, inasmuch it carried 4 6-inch naval guns. Two on the port side, two on the starboard side, and there were naval ratings on there as well. And we pulled out around about 1 o'clock in the morning. We headed down the channel and straight out to sea in the Atlantic. And then we did a lot of zigzagging, and down to the West African coast.
What was the conditions like on the ship? Did you have better accommodation than you'd had before on a troop ship?
Well, we had. Yes, we had more area to ourselves. There'd been a liner, there was four decks, you know, A, B, C, and D. And there was a swimming pool fore and aft, but that was empty. They were empty, you see. And strict regulations about smoking. Dry ship. There was no booze on board.
Were you in cabins? Or?
Yes, in cabins.
How many to a cabin?
Four. And our kit, of course, went in the hold, in kit bags. And we had some kit, you can imagine. With all the canvas baths, basins and things, so forth. And well, before we got to West Africa, there was a boat pulled out from one of the ports on that side, and they took out a target. And it was a towed target. And the old naval vessels, they had a bit of target practice before we went into the port. And it was quite good watching them. And of course, we used to do ships rounds as well, night time. See if everything was all right, you know. Watch. Some of us used to go and watch. 2 hours on, 4 hours off. And issued with a pair of night glasses for searching for subs night time.
That was your main fear, not aircraft then?
No. We had some Hurricane guns. No, I think they were a Sheik gun. Sheik was a backing gun, I think. Hurricane. I've never heard of them before. With the rapid firing, like a heavy machine gun mounted. There's, I think there's about two starboard, two port. That was away from the two big guns. And there was like an AK-AK gun situated on the rear end of the ship. So that was what they call like air protection. But we didn't see any aircraft. We got a good trip across. And
where did you land? I mean, where did you go first?
We landed at Freetown. Now, there's so many disembarked at Freetown. And I was one of them. And from Freetown, we went up into a girls' high school, which was emptied.
What were your first impressions of Freetown on arriving?
Well, it's quite different from other countries I've been to. There's a lush vegetation. Trees, hibiscus, you know, flowers. There's one hotel. There's a shanty town, really, built on the 18th century style. When the slave trading started, and there's a big tree there, and they call it the slave tree, and it's still there yet. That's where they used to bring the natives, the slaves, you know, captured and chained them up to this area, and they used to send them on ships to go to America and places like that, you see, ship them off. There's one hotel owned by a Swiss, call him Swiss Charlie. We were allowed to use that hotel during the evening if you wanted a drink.
And what were your billets like? You were at a girls' school?
Yeah.
What were they like?
Well, big, large classrooms, airy, you know, and we had a chance of practicing our camp equipment, the camp bed, and that's what we slept on. There's plenty of fresh water. We could use the normal water supply, the town water supply. You get a bath as well, so it was quite good. Now the food was a bit of a problem, inasmuch that we didn't get much like the English fare. We had what they call cassava root and yams, and fresh meat, which was killed in the morning, consumed by the evening, you know, for meals. And we had native cooks, the place where they could cook us, you know. in the dining hall. I think there must have been about 25 of us, or 30 in that school, so we had plenty of scope.
And what was this food like? It's slightly strange food to you.
Well, it was, because yam and the cassava, it's 90-95% pure starch. It isn't really like eating a potato, but it's like eating white starch, but it's edible. Tasted all right. And we've got plenty of eggs. The bacon was imported, it was in tinned, but we didn't get it as a supply from the army, you know. That was it.
And what were you doing while you were in the billet, in the school?
Well, we were just normal, just like you and I talking now, you know. We had nothing to do, really, wait, because that was our first landing stage.
So you hadn't had any briefing into what the Royal West African Frontier Force really was, or how it was organised yet?
No. No. We had an officer who used to come around to see if everything was all right, satisfactory. And he'd leave us for the rest of the day. But he didn't have to say, well, we were confined to our barracks, you know what I mean? We could have a walk around town if we wanted to, because we were there. There was nowhere to go to except being in the town. And we went back to our billets. So the only thing we had to wait for was further transport.
What about the local people? How did you get on with them?
Oh, very well. They could speak a fair amount of decent pidgin English, you know, and quite welcome. And very nice. There's a lot of... While we were there, I'd like to just say this. Gambia was further up the coast. It was a colony near the beach West Africa. There were several colonies there, you see. There's the Ivory Coast, there's Gambia, and then there's British West Africa, and then there's Nigeria, all down that western side of the coastal area. And while I was there at Freetown, one of my old friends, Pat Morley, who was a friend of Alfie Howes, because we were all in the same unit together before the war, and during the war, you see. And he's in Gambia. And he sought me out. He must have seen somebody that knew me in that area. And he come up to school. And he said, fancy going out tonight, Jim? I said, to Swiss Charlie's. I said, of course we'll go out for a night. And we had a very good night together. It was the last time I saw Pat for a long, long time, until after the war. Nothing much really happened, but while we were there, it seems that the Vichy French, they tried to get into Dakar, and under General de Gaulle's regime, you know. As a matter of fact, the coastal guns of Dakar was very... They had coastal guns and repelled the ships from coming into the harbour. Naturally, the ships were turned away, so they came down to our part of the world, West Africa. But the riffraff, really, the more civilians and soldiers, I would think governmental people worked in government positions and things, you know, there's nurses, doctors, other people, and they took with Swiss Charlies by force. And while Pat and I were there, we were upstairs in the dining room having some drinks and something to eat. We were coming downstairs and one of these Frenchmen run up the stairs, another one at the bottom started firing pistol shots at him. We ducked. This fella that ran up the stairs, he didn't get hit. We had to wait while we went down. And I thought, oh, we're all right here. It was just like being in Casablanca. Quite an incident. Anyway, Pat left me that night, and as I said, I didn't see him anymore till after the war. And we had to go. I had all my gear and everything, and I was supposed to go to Nigeria. But in the meantime, I was cross-posted when I was at Freetown. And I had to go to Accra. That was the south end of Gold Coast. Now, from
how many were posted to Accra? Just you, or you and...
Myself and Stuart. There's only two of us.
Was that a coincidence, or was it because you'd served together? Well, would they try and put people who'd served together
I think so, yes. And it was quite a long journey.
How did you go?
We went by bus, Stuart and I, from... yes, that's right. Went by bus. We went down to Takoradi. Now that was a natural seaport harbour, Takoradi, because I'll tell you something about that later. We got another bus from another long journey it was, from Takoradi to Accra, bus route, with a great big ramshackle ancient bus, you know, we used to call them mammy buses because there's more women than men going on, you know, jumping off of different markets down the coast and coming back. And that firm was, the bus firm was run by a Greek called Bikazi. And he had a big influence on the coast in as much as he had refrigeration plants and food supplies and things like that. And there's British Bank of West Africa at Accra. And Accra has no natural harbour. The ships have got to stand out, and there's what big boats are calling bum boats, with they're manned by rowers, I think six oarsmen, and they come from the beach, little landing stage on the beach there. They go out to the ship, any passengers come off, the passengers come off first, they bring them ashore, they go back, and then they bring all the luggage off for the passengers. Because there's a lot of Europeans, you see, still in West Africa when I got there, and the Public Works Department and places like that, administrative staff, with being colonial, the European clubs, places, and the Accra was like a fort, and it was established in, it was an 18th century fort, and we went and reported to the commandant of the fort. Reported in with all our kit.
Did the fort have a name?
No, it hadn't. They just call it the fort. Quite a large fort, and it was built on the old 18th century style as well. Typical. Never changed, I don't think, since the first settlers went out. Now, this was the beginning of being introduced into the West African ways of life and the African soldiers. A major, he was a commander of the fort, the adjutant, Ardron they call him.
Who, sorry?
Captain Ardron, he was the adjutant.
And who was the major?
Blackburn Kane. Major Blackburn Kane. And
what are the British there?
I'd have to think carefully about this. There weren't many African troops. We had to start right off scratch by having squads, the same as we used to have in the army.
Now, was this fort like a depot?
Yes.
It wasn't. Was there an actual battalion of the Royal West African Frontier Force based there?
Yes, there was.
Which one was it?
I don't know what battalion it was, but.
And were you with the battalion or with the depot, if you see what I mean?
It was a depot to start with. The fort was a depot, but if you let me explain normally as things grew, there was scarcely anyone in that fort except one or two Europeans, plus myself and the chappie that went out with me. And we were given a company, but as a company it hardly existed, only on paper. The Africans we didn't live in the fort. We did not live in the fort. We only went in there for administrative purposes. And the Africans, they were inside the fort. The nucleus were inside that fort. Now, we had special bungalows for Europeans near the fort.
What were they like?
Very good. Inasmuch we had two compartments in the bungalow. One was a sitting room, a large sitting room, and the other one was partitioned off, for a bathroom and a place for your equipment.
So it was one person per bungalow?
That's right, yes.
So it's a bit like an officer's bungalow in India?
That's right, yeah. And the Europeans and officers, such as there was then, were in the bungalows. And we had to go, we went in the fort, and we started saying, well, A company again. I was in A company. And
this was your skeleton company, wasn't
that's
it?
That's right, like the nucleus. And we had African NCOs as well from African Sergeant Major, African and African Sergeants.
And they'd been trained before?
They were all hands. They were all trained, a scratch. And the number of Africans that I had to teach first, 20.
That was all there was in A Company at that time.
Yeah.